tests I took last fall, and so I wanted to share some of the findings. I'm a sociologist. I don't know if there are any other sociologists here at all, but when I'm talking about religion, I'm talking very broadly, and I know that maybe all or a lot of us are practice a certain form of religion, but in sociology at least, as a discipline, religion is in a lot of ways discounted, and nobody really sees why we should study it at all. Luckily at Baylor, a lot of sociologists do, and we find it very interesting in that it does play a role. And so in this paper, in this study, try to think in that way where a lot of the people that I would normally be talking to would say there's no reason we should study religion whatsoever. So that might add a little bit to what we're talking about. And so I'm looking at white-collar crime and using two macro theories. And so these looking at large groups of populations, not necessarily what things are affecting individual people, but people grouped together, how does that work? And the first one is institutional anomie theory. And the second one is the moral communities thesis, which was proposed most prominently by Rodney Stark, who is a professor here at Baylor. And the overarching question is, does the pressure to achieve economic success dominate the ethical demands made by most religions, especially Christianity, but many others would say that you shouldn't steal in the ways that a lot of white-collar crime might do so. So those are the overarching ways that we're going to work through. And so institutional anomie theory builds from Robert Merton's work on anomie. And he theorized that the high crime rate in America, and he was writing in the 30s, is due to the emphasis that is placed on achieving monetary success. But there's a lack of emphasis placed on the legitimate means to achieve that success. And so when people see that I need to achieve this monetary success, but they're not given the ways or means to do so, anomie, or normlessness, results. So Messner and Rosenfeld, they build from his work on anomie. And they say, and they term this desire for monetary success the American dream, which I'm sure we're all familiar with. But they say that it interacts in a certain way with the way that our culture and society is structured. And they theorize that there's four main institutions in our culture. Education, the polity, family, and the economy. So the economy is what really pushes this whole thing. That people want money, they want success, and that dominates these other areas of our culture. And one example they give is that in education, the way that that's dominated by the economy is that people look at going to school as just the means to an end to get a job, just to achieve economic success. There's no longer learning for learning's sake. It's just what I need to do to get a job. So because of the economy's dominating influence, the sanctioning and regulating abilities of these other institutions, of the family, polity, and education are lost. So individuals begin to pursue this American dream through whatever means necessary, and anomie results. Messner and Rosenfeld also hold that by strengthening the non-economic institutions, the illegitimate behavior can be effectively sanctioned by those non-economic institutions, which reduce the level of anomie, and then criminal acts could be expected to decrease as well. So with this theory, there are various levels of support. There's two basic arms, one that are studying just the interaction of these institutions, and in other studies they look at, is the American culture really the way that maybe Messner and Rosenfeld would say? Is there really an American dream? Are we more apt to just push for monetary success? And for me, looking at it and reading over it and then researching with this theory, it's maddening but then ingenious in a way for Messner and Rosenfeld, because they never explain how to operationalize these institutions. How exactly do we measure education or the economy or anything like that when we want to see, do these institutions affect people? So what that does is it spurs many people to take on their work and say, this is how you operationalize it. But then at the end of the day, if they find support or not, people will argue and say, well, you just didn't operationalize it correctly. So that can be a little detrimental, I think. And so the other part of the study, too, is looking at white-collar crime. And white-collar crime, the theories that are present in the literature right now, first is that they believe maybe white-collar criminals actually have financial need in some way, that they believe that to maintain their current social and economic standing, they have to steal more money to maintain that. And usually white-collar criminals are well-educated. They make probably more than we all do. So why would they steal? And so one reason they say is that they have a fear of falling from that place. More recently, some suggest that white-collar criminals desire more control over their situation. They feel a lack of control. They've achieved a certain amount of success, but they know that this could be gone tomorrow. And so to maintain control, they start to steal to feather their nest or whatever you would say. So due to a fear of falling, losing control, or a fear of failure, they all push these individuals through the impact of the American dream, this desire for monetary success, to commit white-collar crimes. And so I believe in looking at the white-collar crime literature and then IAT that they dovetail nicely just for this idea that because of the economy's domination of non-economic institutions such as the education, the polity, and the family, their ability to sanction and regulate behavior is weakened. So for these individuals, the pressure of this culture increases their fear of failure or fear of falling. So this, paired with a strong desire to control the situation, pushes them to entertain the possibility of committing these crimes and helping themselves. And so from there, there has been one study that looks at white-collar crime and institutional anomie theory in 2006, and they found mixed support for institutional anomie theory. The economy, the polity, and education were all associated with white-collar crime levels in their models, but the family was not. And so they found mixed support, and as I read their study in this class, I thought, man, they don't even account for religion, and that could really be used as a social institution. Just the fact that people are religious, that should play an effect on white-collar crime levels. And in some IAT literature, religion is significantly associated with crime levels, and this is violent crime or property crime, most likely. And so they find support for this. And this is very similar to the moral communities thesis that Rodney Stark and others have proposed. And the premise is that religion should not be understood just as an individual function, just that it's between me and God or whatever, or whoever they would worship, but that it should be understood as a group phenomenon. So he suggests that, quote, what counts is not only whether a particular person is religious, but whether this religiousness is or is not ratified by the social environment. So to restate, an individual's religiosity will affect their actions depending upon the level of religiosity in the culture around them. And so some would disagree, some would agree, and there has been support, and some studies have not found support for this. But I thought that it was interesting and should have been looked at with the past study. And so the hypothesis is higher overall levels of religiosity, and this is a statewide test, so each state is what we're looking at, will result in lower levels of white-collar crime. And so as sociologists, we always have data methods, and I follow closely the past study that looked at IAT and white-collar crime. And so we operationalized white-collar crime as embezzlement rates per 100,000 for each state in 2001. And that's using the FBI's Uniform Crime Reports. And we'll talk more about those after all the findings. The economy is operationalized as percent unemployed. And we'll also talk more about that later. That's what Schopfer and Picaro did, and to kind of further and to really look at whether their study missed something with religion. I followed them closely, but that's the one that I don't really agree with. family was measured with the divorce to marriage ratio. So they would say if a state has a high divorce to marriage ratio, there's a lot of unrest in the family. But maybe states with low divorce rates have strong families, that should decrease white collar crime. And then education is measured percent of the population not graduating high school. And so as that increases, white collar crime should as well. So a more educated populace hopefully would decrease crime rates, according to IAT. And then the polity is measured the percent of the population who voted for U.S. representatives in their state in 2000. So if that is high, people are invested in their counties or in their state, they wouldn't want to be moved to steal or do anything of that nature. And then religion is operationalized as the adjusted total adherence rate as a percentage of the state population. So how many people in the state are going to church or are part of a church on a regular basis? And all of these are using census numbers. And so the results. And I'm not sure how much you all work with tables and percentages and things of that nature, but this is a certain type of regression. And so the stars mean that this is not by accident that this happened. If there are no stars, basically it means that you could do this test a bunch of different ways and it wouldn't show up any differently. So the family, the institution of the family, the institution of education, and the institution of the economy are all significantly associated with higher or lower white-collar crime rates. So in viewing IAT, we find mixed support because polity is not significantly associated with raising or lowering white-collar crime rates. And then specifically, we find religion is not significantly associated with higher or lower white-collar crime rates. So across the 50 states, states that are very high religiously with many people attending church were no different than states with very low attendance rate. You could say that it would be a flip of a coin as to which one would have higher or lower white-collar crime rates. If you were just looking at religious adherence. We do find that is negative, which means if it was significant, it would mean that it was lowering white-collar crime rates as religion went up. More people attending church, white-collar crime went down, but we can't say it with any sort of being sure of it just because of the nature of the test. And so in our discussion, we find no effect of religion. So the hypothesized relationship is not found. So white-collar crimes are just as likely to take place in a religiously active area compared to a religiously apathetic area. I believe it is possible that the operationalization of religion in this study might have been too broad, just looking at who's attending church statewide, and as such could lack explanatory power. So future studies should probably look at different ways to operationalize it. So this would then suggest that the moral community's thesis that has found support may not hold as much weight when looking at white-collar crime specifically. It may not be that a person's religious beliefs have to be ratified by the social environment. Another possible explanation that I found very interesting is that white-collar criminals are more religiously active than other offenders. So Benson and Curley in 2001, they found that white-collar criminals were more likely to be involved in religious activities than street criminals. So there could be a fundamental difference in how religion is associated with white-collar crime compared to violent or property crime. And it makes sense. Maybe a part of being in a white-collar job, maybe they do attend church, and there is a high attendance rate there. But it could be just because of their social situation, whereas maybe folks who are more likely to commit violent crime, although that happens in all sectors, would be less likely to attend church. And two, violent and property crime might present a clearer victim to where white-collar crime, maybe for some people, it doesn't raise the same ethical red flags for them. There's no clear victim if you're taking a little bit of money, not that it is wrong or isn't wrong or whatever. It's just not as clear to them, and maybe they attend church and everything, but it doesn't really come out like it should. And so with this study, there are certain limitations, obviously, and one is the operationalization of the economy, and that was operationalized as the percent unemployed, which the former study did that because they said having a job is a prerequisite for committing a white-collar crime. So if you're unemployed, you can't commit a crime there. And so I say, okay, that makes sense, but it's not really it's not really covering the American dream. It's not measuring if that's actually a part of what's going on here. And so I hope to find a great way to measure the economy, to look and that would make a little more sense compared to white-collar crime. So to me, it was a little surprising that their study was published, just because that really didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. The next one, religion, and we've talked about this, that maybe there should be a different way to operationalize it. Maybe we can't look at a macro level. It needs to be, at least according to white-collar crime, something that's more individual-based, knowing exactly what their religious beliefs are and how that affects them. And then finally, white-collar crime is very hard to study just with the fact that the uniform crime reports, criminologists are always arguing over whether or not to use them because agencies are not required to fill out and show what levels of crime are. It's all, you know, just goodwill if they want to do it. If they want to receive funding, they have to, but they're not required to. So that hurts it. And also, embezzlement rates, some states wouldn't even report any. So you have to look around and try and find some. So those can go up and down. And also, embezzlement is just one arm of white-collar crime. There's many different types of white-collar crime. So to get a real good look at white-collar crime, you know, we have to look at different avenues. And so I'm hoping that in the future I can find different ways to operationalize and look at this. So the conclusion, there is none yet, thankfully. I think that this has helped shed a little light on the issue, the fact that they didn't include religion. Maybe they had tried and they saw how hard it is to do, and so they took it out at the end. But hopefully we'll find more out about it and get kind of what's going on, this nuanced relationship between white-collar crime and religion. So thank you.